recording you're about to listen to consists of several sections. The first is today's Daf Yomi from the 12th cycle of the International Daf Yomi, followed by a brief review that allows you to listen to the entire Daf in between 5 to 10 minutes. That is followed by the same exact Daf from the previous cycle 7.5 years ago, in which there were different people attending and there's a different ambience. Choose the one you enjoy the most, or perhaps listen to one, and then listen to the other for review. Enjoy. Today's Daf in Masechet Amid is Daf Chof Tet, and we're in the middle of the Mishnah, and we got up to the last word on the top line. We were just talking about the Hotza'at HaDeshen. So we basically got up to the point, so far, in the Seder Hayom in Tamid, where we had the description of what was happening in the middle of the night, immediately before the knock on the door. The knock on the door was the beginning of the whole process in which those who had become now Tohar were ready to do the Aveda of the Trumas HaDeshen, would go for the first pious. The first pious took place on the side of the Beit HaMoked, that was Kodesh, and that was because the Beit Elohim, Na'alat HaPeregesh, means that it had to be done in the Beit Elohim. Then they would come in, we said they split up in directions, and they met at the Lishka Osei Chavitim, where they got things moving by putting up the fires, getting the people to put up the fires, in order to have the steam ready for the revicha of the Chavitim. Meanwhile, back at the Kiyor, we had the other Kohanim, who were not Zoch in the pious. The other Kohanim would come in, see that he's now ready to do the actual formal Trumat HaDeshen. They ran, and they were Mekadesh Yadayim V'Raglayim, grabbed the various tools, the pitchforks, small pitchforks, shovels, and so on. And we said that they took aside the large pieces that were still also to remove from the Mizbeach because they weren't completely burning, set them on the side of the Mizbeach, or perhaps on the Kevesh, or the Soviet, depending on which of the Shotim, the Rishonim we take. And then they got to work by clearing off the enormous Tapuach, which the Mishnah uses a lotion of exaggeration. We're going to see that sometimes had Shalosh Me'askur. And that was where we were up to, the Hotza'at HaDeshen, which is removed completely from the Beis HaMikdash, as opposed to Trumat HaDeshen, which was put in that very special location in the area right 10 Amot from the southern edge, 20 Amot from the northern edge of the Kevesh, 3 Tvachim away from the side of the Kevesh. All of that was the formal part. But this was the heavy-duty work, and the last words that we learned was that, nonetheless, there was never a time in which anybody was too lazy to volunteer for the Hotza'at HaDeshen. Now, once that was done, you now have a clean field of the Mizbeach on top. Nothing's on the Mizbeach. The ash has all been cleared away. It's time to set up the Ma'aracha for the day. And so, Hechelu Ma'alin Begizrin B'Sederet HaMa'aracha. They started bringing up onto the clear Mizbeach pieces of wood in order to have the Ma'aracha going. You know, these pieces of wood, it doesn't say anything specific about them. Mashmanit, you can bring up any piece of wood you wanted to bring up. And, but is that true? V'chikola yitzim kisherim l'ma'aracha. Now remember that the whole idea here is, as the Rambam says, is that this Masechta is telling us a story. And since it's telling us a story, remarkably, the Mishnayot are treated as a story. So this is a very strange lashon, because you never find in the middle of the Mishnah, what? Is everything kosher? Or just tell me. If you to bring up the wood and such type of wood. So it's as if you're reading Winnie the Pooh, so to speak, and there's an interjection of, but wait a minute, Christopher Robin, right? And you're supposed to answer. And so this is the grossest. Somebody asks this question in the middle of the Mishnah, right? Wait, hold on a second. You mean any type of ancient? They would be kosher on the Mizbeach? Well, not really. Yes and no. Hey, yep, they are really, theoretically, except that we will not use Geffen and we will not use Zayin. So there's no, we're going to see in the Gemara why, whether it's a logistical question of these being too smoky kind of wood, or whether it has to do with Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, because we don't want people bringing wood that might ultimately sprout and be used for eating purposes. That's part of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Yeah. Aval, even though theoretically all of them are kosher, but the following were the ones that they would usually bring, since you ask. And that is marbuyot shel te'ina, which is strange, of course, because the te'ina is also a fruit tree. Marbuyot means very thick branches, pieces of wood that are really thick from the te'ina, which is the answer as to why, in fact, it's not a fruit tree, as we're going to see. And egos and H-shemen. H-shemen is a very, what precise species it is, but it's a type of wood that carries in it a great deal of flammable sap. So it was the type of tree that could be used for burning very well. Anyway, getting back to the story now, yeah, yes, thank you. Sider et ha-maracha gdola mizracha, and built up now with these pieces of wood, the maracha. That maracha gdola was one of the three marachot. The Mishnah is only going to discuss two of them. One of them was the maracha gdola. The maracha gdola was what was used in order to burn all the evorim of the olot and all of the emurim of the other korbanos. And then there was a second maracha called the maracha shniyah shel ketoret, which we learn out of a pasuk, since it says milifnei Hashem, it says on Yom Kippur, the wood was supposed to be brought from milifnei Hashem, so the ash, the coals, below machta, was supposed to come milifnei Hashem from the mizbeach and then brought in order to burn the ketoret. So there was a separate, we learn out from there, to keep a place milifnei Hashem that's burning. Milifnei Hashem would be on the side that would be closest to the heichal, and that was on the other side, that would be on the side that was Ma'arav. This part was on the eastern side. And what's more, there was a third Ma'aracha, which is a Ma'aracha Ketana, that was there only for what's called the Ma'aracha L'Kiyum Ha'esh. And that would be, since it says Esh Tamid Tukal Al HaMizbeach Lo Tichbeh, so there was a specific Esh Tamid, so to speak, little Ma'aracha, which they kept the fire burning, not used to put things on top of.
So
and that the Mishnah doesn't talk.
It wasn't entirely cleaned off yet.
Yeah, no, it was, because tummy doesn't mean literally all the time, as we'll see later. But the truth is that since our Masechta is referring not to the story as it impacts on the actual things that were done, but rather on the story as it's part of the Avedas HaTamid, which is the actual work that's done on the Mizbeach, this Maracha is not even discussed here, because that's not the point of Masechta Tamid. So the Maracha Gdola, which is part of the Aveda, and the Maracha Tana, meaning of the Kteres, Maracha Shniya, Shal Kteres, is part of the Aveda. Fine, that yes. But the Maracha, which was there for Kiyum HaEsh, is not part of the Dinim that we're going to discuss in a Mishnah. Now this Maracha, when we're talking about the Gizrim, that we're referring to over here, don't confuse that with the, I can't believe it, I didn't bring it again, I'm going to... I lost my mind. I stole our president's Gemara and never brought it back. He'll never lend it to me again. And I don't blame him. I am shattered. If it were only the two of us, I would immediately run back and bring it, and I would feel privileged in doing so. It wouldn't be fair to everybody else, but...
Coming to the end of the booklet. So.
I know. Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry. All right. Anyway, so, well, maybe there were some other good pictures in it that I'll get also. I should have put it directly on my desk, and I must have put it with the copier machine or something. Okay, anyway, getting back to it. So they were misarad the maracha. This means the bringing up of the pieces of wood that were burning. But remember that there was a specific gift of the Shnei Gizrei Etzim, which we're going to discuss, which are not the Gizrim that we're referring to, that were just pieces of wood that you burn. When we say just pieces of fuel wood, well, obviously this was special wood. It was checked. There couldn't be any worms. It had to be dried for long. All of these special dinim about the wood. But we're just talking about the maracha per se over here. So this was that maracha gdola. Now it was arranged in such a way that the wood was placed from the edge of the mizbeach on the eastern side, and so it was mizracha, and chazita mizracha. The chazit, most learn, was a sort of like a window, which was there for purposes of aeration. In other words, it was built carefully, so that the part that was going to be exposed,
that was exposed to the air was exposed to the wind blowing out of the east, which was common. And that way, it was kept very oxygenated, the fire. And Roshei Gezirina Pnimim Aliyu Nogim Betapuach. If you want to know what direction it was placed, it means that the inner side was as close as possible to the tapuach at the middle. That way you would allow the most space possible between the edge of the Mizbeach's Ma'arocha and the actual flames. Because remember, the Kohanim did not have all that wide a space to walk around the Ma'arocha. We only allowed that one Amah for Hiluch Kohanim. We didn't want them to get close to the fire. So therefore, the inside parts of the wood was placed as far inside of the Mizbeach as possible, which, of course, was limited by where the tapuach was on that particular day. But the edge of it would touch the tapuach. And Revach, this is a little bit of a problem, the way the Rambam learns. Remember that the Seder of clearing off the Mizbeach was done every single day. So then there was no tapuach. There was only a tapuach on the regalim, where it was left. According to those who said you wait until there was a lot of ash, and then you were only then, that so then this would make much more sense. But so then it would be the place in Tapuach, and you leave a little bit there. And there was Revach Ben Adizrin, Shoyu Metziti Nedalita Mishan, or Metziti Nedalita. There was a little place where you were able to insert a thin piece of wood in order to get everything lit. So it was built very carefully, and they first put these thinner woods, and then they had a place where it would be oxygenated, and then it would be, and then it would rebirth. Now, because they needed to have a specific second ma'aracha, so they birumisham atzei te'inayafim, they now needed to make gichalim, and those gichalim would be brought to the Mizbeach HaPnimi for the Ktoret, except that the Torah says take that off of the Mizbeach, which is Lifnei Hashem to the Mizbeach HaKtaret. So they use Atzei Teinim. Now, the question of whether when it says Atzei Teinim, does it mean specifically Atzei Teinim, or does it mean the Atzei Teinim, or Agozer, or Hashemen, the way it was said before? So many learn that it indeed refers to Atzei Teinim specifically. And the reason for that would be essentially Kabbalistic. Because since the Ketoret is the only thing in the Beis HaMikdash that preserves the original matzav in Gan Eden, as Bala Kabbalah points out, the only sense that was uninvolved in the chet of Adam Rishon was smell. And because of that, smell is still restorative to us. So Mitzvah Shabbos is where you lose your nefesh, so you have the mitzvah of smelling. That's called the Gina, it's a Gan of Besamim. The so because of that, they used Te'ena, because they needed to have a tikkun for the Etz Hadas, where Te'ena was the tree that was used, and it was used in such a way that the Alei Te'ena became now the beginning of the tikkun of Adam Rishon, so they wanted to burn out Te'ena specifically in order to have its Gichalim to be used for the Ketoret. So it could be that it means that Te'ena Yafim, and then they were misadded on Marachashniya Ketoret, but that was in a different location. And that was Kenegan Ma'aravit Romit, that was on the other side, not facing the side where you would see it as you walked into the Asara, but actually on the other side of the Mizbeach towards the Hecha, and that was the west, but it was also towards the south, but not all the way south. It was Mashruf Menakeren Klapet Safron Arba Amot. It was 4 Amot away from the edge of the Mizbeach towards the north. Now the reason for this is because, as we're going to see, we are looking for just the spot which is keneged the entry to the Eichel. And that's the Lifnei Hashem. So if we analyze, of course, the Machlokas where the Mizbeach was positioned, but we're going to talk about this in the Gemara, this becomes now the spot for the being Mekayim, the words Lifnei Hashem. And we took out, we put, made sure that there were enough wood there, but Omed, so we needed over there to be able to manufacture for the Ketoret. We had to have enough that was going to burn the Ketoret. And on Shabbos, you would also use those, the Ma'arocha Shnia would also be used to burn the Bezichei Levona. Because that was only on Shabbos, the Bezichei Levona, which were taken off of the Shulchan, which were the equivalent, that's Askarata, so it was the equivalent of And here you remember in Menachot, we saw how the abstractions of Menachot are so broad that the whole Shulchan is essentially a mincha. So the bread part is the shiraim of the mincha, which is eaten by the Kohanim, and the what would normally be the kometz of the mincha is the actual bezichin. So that's the kometz. You would bring the kometz in a standard mincha on the mizbeach, and over here you would bring the shnei bezichim on the mizbeach. But those bezichei levona were brought specifically on the Ma'arocha Shnia Shel Kitoris. And this is something that we spoke about a great deal in Zvachim, why it's not brought on the Ma'arocha Gedoyot. But in any event, that's how much you got to make sure you've got, because you need enough to be able to burn properly the Kitoris and the Shnei B'zichin Levona. And as I mentioned, there was another Ma'arocha, which we're not talking about over here, that was the formal Ma'arocha for the Kiyum Ha'esh. Now, the Evorim and the Pidorim, Shalonita Klumi Ba'erev, which at the beginning of the Mishnah, remember, we put on the sides of the Ma'arocha, or we put it on the Sovev, or we put it on the Kevesh, Kenegata Sovev, depending how you learn. So at this point, you're now ready to put them back on. And that's what you did. Now, there's some question over here among the Rishonim as to whether it was put on literally now, or was put on old after the Akravas HaTomid. Because after all, as we learned yesterday, Hi Ha'ola, said Rava, it means it's the first thing that needs to be done. And if we would put back all of these pieces now, then we would be makriv before the Eilam. Whereas others say, no, that's not true. We're just putting it back on. It's been on the Mizbeach the whole time. We're just putting it on the fire. That was the point. We never took it off of the Mizbeach. So basically, these were burning from yesterday. Whether they're directly on the fire or whether they're 20 feet away from the fire is irrelevant, since they're still on the Mizbeach. So now they're... Yeah, so that's good. So yeah, for sure. Yeah. And therefore, when we put them back on the H, we're really not... We're just restoring things the way they were. So this is not in any way violating the klal of Hi Ha'olah. Okay. Then the mashmot, the simple mashmot, is that's what we do right now. So we put them back on. V'itzitu shtei ma'arachot ba'esh. Now both of them were lit. And Yardu, the Kohanim, would then get off of the Mizbeach uvolam l'lishkat ha'gazit. The next place where the Kohanim would run to would be the Lishkat ha'gazit. And that's because the next pious that was done to define who gets the privilege of doing the next avodot was done in the Lishkat ha'gazit, as we'll see. Omar Rava, this business about 300... It's absolutely impossible. How could it be Shal Shmeyas Kurim? That's enormous. That's a guzma. And that other mission that we have that talks about Hishkat Atamid B'Koshal Zahav, we have later on, it's also a guzma. I've never heard of giving an animal to drink out of a Koshal Zahav. So it doesn't mean literally gold. That's a guzma too. Rabbi, the clout is that guzma is perfectly valid way of using language, because it's meant to impact you and is not meant to be literal. So we find that the Torah speaks Lashon Havai, we find that the Nevi'im speak Lashon Havai, and we find that the Chachamim speak Lashon Havai. And I'll bring you examples. The Torah speaks Lashon Havai when it says something like Arim Gdolot Uvitzrot Bashamayim. What is that supposed to mean? Skyscrapers. I mean, when you say skyscrapers, what do you mean? The building is so high that it's touching, I don't even know what the sky is. Scraping the sky. I mean, you mean a big, tall building that looks like, wow. That's all it means. That's what it means here. Shamayim scrapers. So, Shamayim Sagadaita, Ewer Guzma. Now, I'll show you that we do that also. Dibruch HaChamin Lashon Havai. Well, we said, the Tapuach, Hishkut HaTamid, B'Koshel Zahav, those are good examples. Dibruch Nevi'im Lashon Havai. Well, I mean, we find the Lashon of, let's say, the Amor, it's B'Kalalim, B'Kalilim, V'Tibaka Ha'aretz L'Kolam. Now, I mean, do we really believe that there was so much music coming out of those flutes that there was an earthquake? I mean, it means that, wow, the ground was trembling. I mean, that's what we're saying. It doesn't mean literally. It means that there was a tremendous amount of noise. That's all. And therefore, we find in our Mishnah an example of this idea. So it's all guzma. Om Rabbi Yani Bar Nachmeni Om Shmuel, b'shlosha mekomot dibru chachamim lashon havai. I disagree. And I hold that there were only three places where we find lashon havai listed among the chachamim, and these are them. And do not include the koshel zav stuff. The Elohim, tapuach, gefen uparochet. Now the tapuach you know about, but you notice that I'm not telling you that the koshel zav is a lashon guzma, because it isn't. Lafukim in a rovim. Because it says it's not in the Mishnah later, Ishku et atamid bekoshel zahav, which Rava claimed was another example of a lashon guzma. And I say, why? Why say it's a lashon guzma? You're saying, well, I mean, it's weird. Why? Because that's the point. You're in a makom of hashirut, and you want to show that there are no holds barred. So, bedafka, you would want to use a koshel zahav, because these other cases, okay, fine, it doesn't make sense to talk about 300 kor. It's not logistically reasonable. But as far as using koshel zav, why not take it literally? So the idea over there of the kosh could be einaniyut b'makom hashirut. Now, nobody explained my three. Let me explain my three cases. The tapua, you know about. That's our mission here. Hodi amaran. When I'm talking about a gefen, what is that referring to? That gefen is a reference to the Mishnah, I should say. That's none. Gefen shel zahav etalmidet apetach ha'echal. There was a beautifully made golden, looked like a gefen, that was put over the opening of the heichal. Umudla agabi klunasot, and it was there on top of what do they call those things? Trestle?
Trestle?
No. What?
Lattice?
Trellis. Thank you. Yes. Excellent. Yes. So it was actually made to look like a gefen. It was lying on a trellis, but it was made out of gold. And the thing is that they actually do this in various yeshivas, something like it. You want to give a donation. So you can donate a leaf. You know, in memory of. So if somebody wanted to give gold to the Heichal, this is a beautiful way to give gold. You give a leaf to this Geffen. Or you could give even a whole cluster if you're really rich. You know? So if somebody wanted to give Nadev Allah, or maybe a grape, or a gargir, or maybe a Olashko, could be maybe. And it would be a beautiful way of having people donate money to the Beit HaMikdash and hang it on the beautiful Geffen. And Omer of Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok, Ma'aseh haya, v'nimnu alah shalosh me'or koyanim lefanuta. They once needed 300 koyanim to lift up the gold off of it. And that is my other example of a... And that's ridiculous, because that would be so heavy, there'd be no way that the tree could have supported it if it was made out of gold. So it's just ridiculous to say you can't say in on the Yudba Makom HaShirut on that. It doesn't make any sense. And so that's a case. But koshel zahav, that's not a problem.
It
was a lot of gold on it. So if they needed to clear it off to get the next year's donations, it was very impressive. The poroket, that's another Mishnah. The tznan, that we have the story of the may. This is besides the other porochot, but the major porochot was the poroket that was made in two parts, that was used in place of the amatraxin. In the first Beis HaMikdash, there was an actual mechitza between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadosh. But that's because it was only 40 amos high. The second Beis HaMikdash was 100 amos high. There would be no way that a mechitza that was only one amah thick, they were incapable of building it in a way that it wouldn't collapse of that height. And so therefore, they instead utilized a poroket instead of actual building materials. The problem is that then the question was raised about what the din is of the space of the amatraxin. Was that space actually, in terms of floor space, was that part of the Kodesh HaKadosh? Was part of the Kodesh? So they really didn't know where to put the parochet, because you might put it on the wrong end. So what they did is they put two. Put one at the beginning of the yama, one at the end of the yama. And that's how you get the idea of walking in between them, right, on Yom Kippur. because that was meant to take the place of the beginning and the end of the actual machitza that was out of the thick wall. So, okay. So they needed two of these things, and they would replace them. And the Tanan retrieving them, Leon Omer, Mishum, Rabbi Shimon ben Askan, that this particular thing was made ovia tefach. It was so thick, this baruch. It was a full tefach thick. And in order to make it, you needed a weaving machine that is shivim v'shnayim nimin ne'ereget. So it needed to have 72 bote nimin. Each one of those nimin, I'll call nima v'nima, was esrim v'arba'ah chutin. Because remember, it was actually the four different nimin, because it was made out of talash, shani, v'sheish, argaman, and so on. And so we needed to have each one of them. We learn out from the Lashonos of Vad that it had to be, each one was kofel, shisha, which means you've got 4 times 6, it's 24. So it was extremely, extremely thick threads. You can imagine how heavy this thing was. It was 40 amot long, 20 amot wide. Its weight is inconceivable. It's dry weight. Forget about its wet weight, which we're going to be talking about. Mishmonim v'shtayim ribu na'aseh. Now, there's a number of different pirushim on this. Shmonim v'shtayim ribu, if it's ribot, which is the other yirsa, then it means girls. They would use shmonim v'shtayim ribu of girls, which is, shmonim v'shtayim rather, ribu, 82 girls would work on this thing. If it means ribu with an olive, then it means the amount of money. It would cost 820,000 dinar to make this thing. Or it could be the total number of threads of this one that it's referring to. Shmonim v'shtayim ribu threads. They would make two of these every year. Shtayim asim b'chol shana v'shana. And to be teivel it, the reason they were teivel it is because they were afraid that maybe one of the women who were working on it had been roya nidot and was metameh it. So because of that, it was a stomach, gezerah, kelim kadoshim. They were teivel because of this. It's part of the mile of Kodesh. And its weight was such that it needed 300 kayanim to be able to put it into mikveh. And that 300 kayanim is a guzma. Echelu ma'alin b'gzirin, saderet ha'amaracha, and all types of wood was okay, except for zayit and gefen. And why is that? Hani ma'i taima?
Why is 300 kayanim a guzma?
Because there's not even a place for 300 kayanim.
Yeah,
that's
where,
right. Where would they stand? It's not, it just means you can't, so many people need it to hold it. So why do we say that you cannot use Zayit and Geffen? Because they have knots. Since they have knots, they do not properly dry out. The knot doesn't dry. And because of that, when it's burned, it's smoky. Rav Acha bar Yaakov says that has nothing to do with the wood. It has to do with the fact that these are fruit trees. And we're worried about Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Meitzet. Al ha'etzim asher al ha'esh. Why put it that way? Because it means etzim anitochim liyotesh. What we want is to use the kind of wood that combusts very rapidly. So it becomes esh. My new, what type of wood will we be referring to? Dokresh po, delokatra. We want the type of pointy, in other words, thinner branches that don't have any type of nuts in them. And that way they don't smoke. And va'azim mikter mitocho. And that way, if it would, you would have the knots. There's different types of knots. But if you've got a thicker branch, the branch penetrates into the actual main trunk of the tree. And therefore the katre goes all the way inside. And that passes it from being useful for the mizbeach. Now, the problem is that our Mishnah says, and some don't even have this part of the Girsa, which is just a quote from our Mishnah. If you call it some chair lamar rocha, ain't call it some chair kutzmanazem and agefen, avo beilo, you regile, bemor, bior, chotein, shalegers, vishalat, shemen. Okay, this part, we need to know. Rebbe Eliezer Mosif, av shal maish, vishal alon, vishal dekel, vishal charuv, vishal shikma. Now, what we're interested in knowing is, what is the machlokes between the Tanakam and Rebbe Eliezer? Why does Rebbe Eliezer hold that Alon, Dekel, Charuv, and Shikma is okay, and the Tanakam doesn't? So Bishlam, Lamandiyam, and Pshim, the Katri. If the problem is smoke, Then smoke that comes from nuts. So then I understand the machlokas, because knowing what I do about these types of wood, I can tell you that it's very obvious what the two groups are. You've got, or three groups, in other words, we've got one group of deep knotted trees. That everybody is made of, that you cannot use. And that's the Geffen and the Zion. Then we've got another set of trees that don't have knots. So that was the Morbiot that we were talking about. And then you have a set of trees which the branch doesn't penetrate into the main trunk. So there's a knot only at the edge. Now, and that would make sense, because, I mean, I don't see anything in common other than that. So if the issue is knots, then I understand what's going on. We're all agreed that if there's no knots, it's kosher, and if there's penetrating knots, it's not kosher. We're all agreed that certainly trees that don't knot at all are great. And now we have a machloket about whether a surface knot is a problem and whether we're going to consider that to be possible, even though it's such a minor issue and the amount of smoke it's going to generate is limited. And that's the machloket between the Tanakama that doesn't mention all of these others and Rebbe Eliezer is motif all of these other kinds of wood. So I can understand that. And the machloket would be like this. The Bahokami for it. Mar sover afakav de lo katri migavoy, even the katri mivaroi lo maitina. So the Tanakhama says, look, it still has a small knot at the edge, and that's the deal. We don't bring anything that has knots. Whereas Rebbe Eliezer is saying that, no, it's given lo katri migavoy, since the knots don't penetrate, afakav de mivaroi katri maitina. It's not knots per se that bother us, it's deep smoking. But according to Mount Yomar, it says it's Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. I don't even know what's going on over here. We have like a set of things that are problems with Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So what's that? That's only Geffen and Zion. But what? But Dekel, that's not Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Obviously, the Tainer should be Yishuv Eretz Yisrael too, which we're going to have to discuss in a moment. So, but if you're going to tell me it's from Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, how do you explain the fact that you have the Kalim, Dekel, Milet, maybe Shem Yishav, there it's Yisrael. Say, isn't there a problem of using the Kalim? And so why didn't you say anything about Teina? You should have shouted at, how can you say that the problem is because of Yishav, there it's Yisrael in the Geffen and in the Zayit, and therefore we go to the Teina? What's, you got something against Teinim? Teinim led by Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. It's a fruit-producing tree. It's one of the special minim of Eretz Yisrael. We're going to burn Teina? So Ella Maitlach Lamemer. So what are you going to tell me? Well, that it's obvious. I mean, we're not stupid. If you're telling me the problem is that we're contrasting Zayit and Geffen with Teina, you're talking about a Teina de lo avida pera. So you mean you're using sterile Teinim that don't produce figs. So why not say the Dekel is the same thing? Dekonami bin aloha vit pira. No. There's such a thing as what? A teina? The lo of the pira. I mean, the dekel I understand. Of course there's sterile trees. You're telling me that you could use a dekel. Fine. But if you're telling me you always use the teina, I mean, you certainly don't have enough teinim that are sterile that you're going to use them all the time. It's a heck of a lot of wood. Where's that all coming from? I mean, it can't just be a particular tree. It's got to be a special type of teina that we're talking about. And there is such a thing. And Rechava said, look, that what they used to do is they used to modify the trees so that they would be wood-producing trees instead of fruit-producing trees. Now, normally, the teina wood
genetic engineering?
No, it's interesting. It wasn't genetic engineering. It was logistic engineering. We'll see in a moment. Normally, the fig wood is pretty useless because it has a lot of latex in it. And what they used to use it for was, it's fascinating, what they used to use it for was making mummy coffins. So that was very common, using
mummy coffins.
That's
a medical use.
Yeah. The latex, not the wood. But what they would do, said Rechava, is they would bring Te'enei Chivarta. The Te'enei Chivarta, the pale Te'enim, were anyway very poor quality teinim. So for eating, they weren't useful. So what they wanted to do was to use the teina, which is a quick growing tree and it's a strong tree, to produce wood. So the only way to get it to produce wood would be to make sure it wasn't producing fruit, because then it would use all of its energy for the fruit that it was producing. So what they would do was shayfilahu b'kavla b'tzavta b'sorakalei bizra. What they would do is they would scrape down using a sandpaper that was made out of the tsure deka, which are the sharpie, it's a sandpaperish growth that comes out of the bottom of the palm, which you see here all the time as you walk by that. It's that stuff that you want to stay away from because it really could scratch you. And they would use that to shave off the bark carefully until you get to the flint. Now that, usually when people cut the bark,
it kills the tree.
But that's because it's not the bark that is so important. It's the fact that attached to the bark is the flint on the other side, which is where all the nutrients go up through the tree. And this tree, if you would actually pull off the bark, you'd kill it. But you can sandpaper the bark. So they would sandpaper the bark right up to the point where the tree would not be killed, but was not protected the way it normally is, and therefore the tree would not produce seed. And all of that energy, now, it would also usually die, because you need the bark to protect it, to keep it damp, and so on. So what they would do is, they would plant these trees, they would plant it specifically in a delta, where there was sediment, so where there was always water that would come up when the water was high and go back down, so that it was kept really wet all the time, and that way it wouldn't be killed by the removal of the bark, and it would pire lo avda, but kora avda would put all of its energy into manufacturing wood in an attempt to thicken these branches and regrow, but pire lo avda. This stuff was so heavy and was so concentrated in energy, which is what we want for the Mizbeah, that Tlat Brichim Inayu, Lo Machzer Kulu Gamla, you often see, it's very interesting today, you see trucks that are carrying these thick trees, and they've got three of them, two on the bottom, one on top. And it's this whole long, you see them on the highway sometimes, it's absolutely shocking to see these enormous wood. And the point that it's so contemporary, the point is that you can't cross a bridge with more than three because the bridge would collapse. So that would be the example of how heavy this wood was. So Mamela, yes, so Te'ina actually was specifically grown for this kind of purpose. Deka was not. And that's why we're asking, what about the Deka? So it makes more sense to me that what we'd be talking about is, I was claiming that I wasn't worried about the Tain, I was worried about the Deka. And okay, you want to tell me that once in a while you use Deka from a sterile tree? All right, that I can accept. Sidera Tamar Chahagdola. And then it says the Chazit was to the east. Why is that? My time of why was it put there? And everything was put Dafka towards the east. Why would that be? So one says, look, the reason is because we want it to be facing the direction of the wind. So that way you would get a lot of oxygenation through the Mizrach, because the Mizrach was where you had the Shar. If you put it in the opposite direction, we wasn't going to get any air, because that area was blocked entirely by the Hekel and by the wall. So the area that was open was the enormous gate, which was towards the east, and therefore you put it in that direction, and so it was open to oxygen. The reason was because we wanted the ability to have easy access, and it doesn't mean that the access is to the east in the sense of the entire thing being on the east. It means instead of having the access in the other side, where it was going to be blocked by the tapuach, it would be difficult for us to light it, we put it where it had the easiest entry to the kohen, given that it's on that side anyway. What? What do you mean, begizirin? You mean anything? Actually, hey, כל העצים קשרים למערכה, חוץ משל גפן ושל זית, אבל באלו היו רגילים, the following מרביות של תאינה ושל הגוס ושל עד שם. So סידרת המערכה הגדולה מזרחה, with the חזיתה facing מזרחה, וראשי גזירין הפנימיים היו נוגעים בתפוח, ורווח היה בין הגזירים שהיו מציתים את העלית משם, בירו משם עצי תאינה יפים for the seder of the Maharaka Shnia Lektoret, and that was put keneged Maharavit Romit, but it was Mashuf Menakeren Klapei Tzafon Arba Amot to get it right in front of the Petach of the Hechal, and the amount was approximately Chomesh Soin Gecholim in order to burn the Ktoret properly. B'Shabbat you needed more because you would actually bring the Shnei Zichel Levona out there. So b'Shabbat it was approximately ba'omed, is it the same as ba'omed with an olive? Approximate. Shmona sa'im gechalim, sheshama yunotim shnei v'zichel levona shalechem apanim. And the evarim and the petarim, shalom nitaklumi ba'erev, now it's time to put them back on, machzirim otam l'maracha. Ha'itzitu shtei marachot ba'esh, and then yardu avolam l'shkat ha'gazit, in order to choose up for the next avodah. Omar Rava, this business of 300 sa, I mean, that's outrageous. And that's just a Lashon Guzma, which is acceptable. I mean, 300 kur, sorry. Well, that's a Lashon that's acceptable. And Rabbami points out that Dibra Torah Lashon Havai, Dibra Chaneviyim Lashon Havai, and Dibra Chachamim Lashon Havai. Dibra Torah Lashon Havai, Dechtiv Arim Gdalot Vtzrod Bashamayim. I mean, come on, man. Bashamayim, Sarkatakta. Ela Guzma. Dibru Chachamim Lashon Havai, well, we said the Tapuach, and we have Yishkut Atamit B'Koshel Zav later on. Dibru Neviim Lashon Havai, Dechtiv V'Amaretz B'Chavavim B'Chavavim V'Atibaka Aretz L'Kolam. Om Rav Yaneh Bar Nachmeni Om Shmuel, or Om Rav Yaneh Om Shmuel, is probably more accurate, but Shlosh Mekomot Dibru Chachamim B'Lashon Havai, Ve'Elohei, only Tapuach, Gefen, and Parochet La'Fuke from Rav's fourth case, which is the Mishnah later of Hishku et Atamid, Bekoshel Zahav, where Rava claimed it was a Guzma, and I'm telling you that no, only the three cases above, Hani in Atam Lo. The reason is, there's no reason to say it's a Guzma, because it makes sense to say that Ein Aniyut Bimkom Ashirut. And what are the three cases of Tapuach? Okay, we already saw that in our Mishnah, Damarot. The Gefen you don't know about, so let me tell you, it's not. Gefen shel zav et omedet al petach ha'echa mudla al gabi klunasot. The kol mi shemitnadev ala o gagir o ishko meviv et toleba. Omer Abelazar Rabbi Tzadok ma'aseh haya v'nimnu alea shalosh meot kohanim lefanota. That shalosh meot is another guzma, just like the shalosh meot kur is a guzma. The parochet is another shalosh meot. The Tzar of Shimon Gamliel and the Shimon of Shimon ben Askan. Parochet Ovia Tefach, Ashivim Ushnaim Nimi Nereged, Akol Nima Vinima, Esrim Yarba Achutim, Orka Arba Imama, Rogoba Esrim Ama, Umishmonim Vishtaim Ribu Naaset, or Ribot Naaset, Vishtaim Osim Bechor Shana Vishana, Vishalosh Beot Kadim Abilinota. That's your third case of Guzman. Echelu Malin Begizrin the Saderet Amaracha, and all wood could be used other than Zayat and Geffen. Why? Hani my taima. Rav Papa Amar, it's got too much knots in the wood. Mishum the Katri. Rabaka Brayakav Amar, the wood might be perfectly okay, but it's going to hurt Yishuv Eretz Yisrael using things that could be productive. Meitvet. Ala Eitzim. Asher Ala Eish. Which means Eitzim that are rapidly oxidized to be nitofim liot eish. And what would that be? That would be tokri shpud delo katri va'azim mikto bitocho. We don't want those nuts. V'chikola etzim k'sher l'maracha. This perhaps we should leave out, as appears to be the case in most places. But anyway, doesn't hurt to repeat the Mishnah. V'chikola etzim k'sher l'maracha. Hein, kola etzim k'sher l'maracha. Except Zayat v'gefen, avu be'ilo ayuregilin mar b'yot sh'tayna sh'legot sh'leit shemen. And here's the point that's important to us. Rebbe Eliezer mosif av shal mayish v'shal alon v'shal dekel v'shal charuv v'shal shikma. Now, I understand that we've got our sets very clearly defined. So Marasovar Avagav Lua Katri Bigavoy, and that was one of the things we said before, we want to avoid the knots that go through the main branch. But keep it the Katri Mi Baroy, that's bad enough. Lo Maitina. Marasovar, keep it Katri Bigavoy, Avagav Mi Baroy Katri Maitina. But according to Rabban Yomar Mishum Yishuver, it's Yisroel. I understand a decal is not a problem. You let me show Yishuver Yisroel. I'm all up with a taimik. Why didn't you complain about the teina? I mean, it's the same thing. There's no yotzei mishum yishuver tzrolo ma'itlach lameima that the teina is lo avid pera. So we're talking about a dekel nami but lo avid pera. So what are you saying? There's such a thing as a teina that there's going to be so many teinim that we have enough that we're going to normally use the morbiyot teina that lo avid pera in? Yes, indeed. We actually raise teina for this purpose. For murbiot, kirechava. Yom rechava, maite te'inach imarata. V'shai felu, v'chav lo detzavta, desorach alei bizra. And then we planted echanamaski yom asirton. And then those trees, kora avga, that's all they do, is they make these thick beams. They don't make any perot. Peri lo avga. But tlat birchim inai was so heavy, that lo magzik gulagam. Siderat HaMarcha Gedolah, the chazit was towards the east. Why? Shuvuna Rav Kista, Chara Mar Kadesh, they are Rokh Menah Shevet Ba. V'chara Mar Kadesh, Yom Etzitit Et Alita. Meit Ve, Reva Chayav Ben Ben Akzirim, Shayim Etzitit Et Alita, it's Mashma, that could be anywhere. Omer Lacham, Mekamot, Mekamot Abde.
That was the daf from the 12th cycle of the International Daf Yomi. Hold on, and you shall hear the same daf from the cycle 7.5 years ago, cycle number 11.
Okay, today's daf is daf Chof Tetz, Besechet Tamid, Tov Shin Samach Hei. Okay, the Mishnah, you will remember, that begins talking about the way in which the Kohanim raked to the Tapuach the ashes that were on the Mizbeach, and it says sometimes there was so much ash that there were 300 purim of ashes. Omar Rava Guzma. That's obviously exaggeration. There's no way you could possibly have stacked 300 purim of the Mizbeach. It's simply not physically large enough.
300 is normally the Guzma number.
300 is always Guzma, correct. Yishkua tatamit bekosh shel zahav. And we'll see later on that they would give the Talmid a drink of water before Shkita. That makes it easier to do Hapshata Ta'or. And they would use a Koshel Zahav, and Rava said that too is a Guzma. They wouldn't use gold, maybe it was polished copper. Om Rebbe Ami, Dibra Torah Lashon Havai, Dibra Nevi'im Lashon Havai, Dibra Chachamim Lashon Havai. This idea of using words in ways that are not meant to be literal, but are exaggerations, in order to give you the sense of the impact upon the way that you would see it. Wow! So, you know, it might as well have been gold, in such an effect. That idea is found in the Chumash itself, in the words of the Nevi'im, and in the words of the Chachamim. Dibrat Torah, Lashon Havai, Dechiv Arim Gedolot Uftzorot Bashamayim. The fortifications of the cities reach the sky. That's like we say a skyscraper. Doesn't mean literally a skyscraper, but it means that the impact that it makes on you is such that it's extremely high. So Beshamayim talk about, what do you think, it really touched the heavens? And it's absurd. Ela Guzma. Clearly that's a Guzma. Dibru Chachamim Lashon Havai, we just had the two cases. We had the Tapuach, and we had the Yishkut HaTamid B'Koshel Zahav. Dibru Nevi'im Lashon Havai, by Shlomo HaMelech, when they had the inauguration, it says, V'am Mechalalim B'Chalalim, Vatibaka ha'aretz lekolam. So what do you think? It was really an earthquake from the sounds of a little orchestra. It's a fashion of speech to say that. Obviously, it's Lashon Guzma in its essence. Om Rav Yana Bar Nachmanah Amar Shmuel b'shlosha mekamot dibru chachamim b'lashon havai. Actually, there's three places where the chachamim used language that is clearly meant as an exaggeration. The three cases are the Tapuach, which we just had in our Mishnah, the Geffen, which we're going to have, and the case of the Parochet, which we're going to have, and notice that he very clearly leaves out Rava's case, which is the Tummy. Ishkua tatamit bekosho zahav. The Tzaddan, it says in the Mishnah, Ishkua tatamit bekosho zahav, and Omar Rava guzma. Comes along now Rabbi Yana to explain that that's not the case. Kamashman hani in yes. The other cases are clearly guzma'ot. However, it is not so mad to say that they literally gave the tamid to drink in a kosher zahav, because that was in general a principle in the Beit HaMikdash, in aniyut b'mokom ashirut. The mokom ashirut, the Beit HaMikdash, is meant to be a place that implies vast riches and endless resources, and therefore makes a wonderful impression to actually use a kosher zahav for hashkiat tamid. Something that's done every day. I mean, it's a limited investment for something that for hundreds of years makes an impression. Why would that be a guzma? Now, what are the cases that you had? With tapuach, okay, tapuach of the Amaran. We talked about the case of the tapuach of the Mizbeach. It's simply too small, the Mizbeach, to hold 300 course. Obviously, that's a guzma. The case of the Geffen. What's that talking about? The Tanya. Geffen zahav hayta omedet al petach harichal umudla agabe kelunasot. There was a shape of a geffen that was made out of gold, and it was placed as if it were a real geffen on a trellis. And the trellis, because it wasn't mechubur lekarka, was considered to be netiat eitz. So you know, even with the chumrah, not to put anything of wood, but it was like a kli. And they had that on the petach of the heichal, and somebody wanted to give a donation. You know, they did something like this in the that down as you're going down in Rabbi Gorin's building up there. You know, that's the Christmas tree building. So the anybody who wanted to give a donation, they would hang his name on a little leaf on the tree. That's what they did here. Somebody gave gold to the Beit HaMikdash. They said, "Okay, I want to give a leaf, or I want to give a grape." And they would do that as solid gold and hang it on the tree. So you ended up with an immense tree that was sprouting golden grapes and golden leaves. V'chol mishem mitnadev Allah or gargir, or some people, if they were rich, they could give an entire eshkol, an entire cluster of grapes. Maybe he would bring this v'toleh, and it was hung up on that tree. And here's where the guzma comes in. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok, they needed 300 ganim to take it, take off the gold, which is obviously ridiculous, because the gold that weighs enough to require 300 ganim, as the Rishonim say, would have smashed the trellis. There's no way the thing would have been able to support it, and therefore it isn't meant to be taken seriously. The case that, by the way, the Rush brings over here, the Yerushalmi, that says that Shlomo had planted an actual golden vine that grew gold, that kind of money tree, that's the kind of thing that we could use, you know. But in the second Beit HaMikdash, they have to settle for this poor imitation. The porochet that we said was a guzma, what is that referring to? It's not. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Askan, porochet, ovia tefach. The porochet was a tefach thick. And it was woven on 72 rows of threads, which is how it got to be a tefach thick. Every one of those 72 was, remember, kofur shisha of the different minim, the shesh, the argaman, the tolat shani, and so on. So you had six minim. That means that you needed to have on every single one of them, of the 72, 24 chutim, because it was kafel shmona, and you had the four different types. The problem is that that gets you up to 1,728 individual threads in each thread, in each nima. It sounds a little bit exaggerated, even to get a parochet that's a tefach thick. But here's a little bit of a question: which part is the exaggeration? And it was 40 amas long, which is obviously is necessary to cover the height of the heichal from top to bottom, and it was 20 amas wide, which was the width of the petach in the heichal, and it was made. Now here is a question of Girsaot, which may be where the exaggeration is. Umishmonim v'shtayim ribo narot naset. They used 820,000 girls to weave it, if you have that girsa. Now that's something of an exaggeration. But some of the girsa, mishmonim v'shtayim ribos, is plumpy little girls. You know, riba in the sense of a chick, you know, I would say today. So they would have 82 ribos, and that's not so much.
Well, it matches the rovim.
Why? Yeah, it's true. Why would they have dafka ribos? So if you learn that it's prepubescent, the reason is they didn't want any of these girls being matami, the finished kli. If any of them would be anita, then it would, that would be a hassle. However, as we'll see, we're going to be terrible it anyway. And shtayim osim b'chol shana v'shana. They would make two every year. The reason they would have to make two every year, well, first of all, maybe you use two because we're talking about the parochet that was covering over the traksin in the second Beit HaMikdash. The second Beit HaMikdash, remember, they could not build a wall because they had made it high. It was too tall to support one tefach, and only a tefach was allowed. You couldn't have more than a tefach between the Heichal and the Kodesh Kadoshim and the Kodesh. The first Beit HaMikdash, which was not that tall, they had an amma of wall. The problem is one amma will not stand at that height, made out of starch. So they had to make use reinforced concrete. So in the Mela, instead of that, they put in a double curtain. So they had one parochet on the outer part of the wall, one parochet on the inner part of the wall. The problem is that if that's the case, as the Nefarish here points out, then there would be no room for the Kohen to walk between the two parochot. Because remember, on Yom HaKippurim, you would find the parochet for parrot on the side, would walk through the edge, walk along the inside between the two parochot, come out on the other end, inside of the Kodesh HaKadosh. So to one side it was open to the Kodesh, the other side was open to the Kodesh HaKadosh. You obviously couldn't move this thing, put it to the side, something of that weight. So therefore, if it was actually a tefach, and the whole thing was only one arm of traxin, there would not be enough room for the going to walk, because you have to take off two tefachim from the arm of traxin. How's he going to fit in four tefachim? Therefore, Rashi elsewhere says this is not a reference to the double parochet that was taken over the traxin. It was a parochet mitzniut and the gateway to the heichal. So why did they make two? Because it used to get dirty from the ktoret. The ktoret would put a deposit of ktoret over everything. So, okay, the walls you can wash. They had actually washing elevators that were along the roof, in which workmen would go on the second level of the Beit HaMikdash. The elevator would come down and they would work on the wall without entering into the Beit HaMikdash, because they'd be in the elevator. So only the wall would be open, but that's the first time you find this. Now it's very popular in washing skyscrapers. They do this. They have these elevators that go down, and they do the windows as it goes. Usually machines do it. So here they had these elevators. That was a problem. How do you clean the parochet? So they basically had to replace it. And replacing it means that they had to keep manufacturing these things. And they do every year. And here's the part that everybody assumes is the guzma. The classic number for guzma is 300. 300 kohanim were needed to be table this thing. Now, why the heck you should be table this thing is another quote. What exactly was it about it? I thought they made sure that all of these girls were not possibly going to be matamia. Look, there's a whole discussion of this. Because there's a halacha that when you're gamer a kli, you're going to use it for a kodesh, it needs tefillah. One of the milas of kodesh. And in which case, so why did they have to have those rebu? Why didn't they use grown women anyway? So what would be the problem? Okay. But the Grah points out something very, very beautiful. What was the size of this thing? 40 by 20. Which means that it had a total circumference of how much? 120. Right?
40 by 20?
Yeah. Yes. 40 plus 40, 20, 20. Right? 80, 100, 120. The amma of the kalim, if we view this as a kli, because it wasn't part of the binyan, otherwise it wouldn't be makabal tuma, right? Some Kabbal Tumim is a binyan. Although some learn that the reason it's Kabbal Tumim is dafka because it's considered to be a ohel, because it was used to be mahil over the Aron, remember? It's used the lashon of socher. The parochet is socher on the over the Aron. That's how we learn out the binyan of
socher. If you own the two.
Yeah, if you own the two. So in any event, it turns out that you have Amakalim. Amakalim is five tefachim. Five tefachim times 120 is how much? 600. 300 kohanim, each using two tefachim, equals 600 tefachim. Which means that 300 kohanim exactly fit along this parochet.
Assuming.
In which case.
But these are all meat-eating. Regular, we were just saying the other day, and we're going to fit them.
Are you going to make our kohanim into?
No, I'm not going to make them into anything.
What's the name of that guy? You know.
I'm just asking if that's like what
Paul Bunyan.
Danny
Arbo. Sorry, I thought we'd be finished by now. I apologize. Okay. So according to the Gra, this part isn't a guzma. Who's to say 300 kohanim wouldn't be tivoli? Could you imagine what this thing weighed with water in it? And what's wrong with needing 300 kohanim? So Hitain is the guzma, was the other part.
Where would they tie
it? I mean, where could you get a mikvah big enough?
The ocean's
not sure, I don't know. Yeah, whatever. Take it down to the. Yeah.
There are vast chambers of the mount for water. Maybe one was for mikvahs.
That's true. There are rivers running through the base of mikvahs area. Fine. There are all types of wood kosher for the maracha. I asked, by the way, the Groa talks about that too. What's this funny lotion? And are all wood kosher? Yes, indeed. What kind of funny mission is that? Just tell us, all kinds of wood are kosher. So he says that because of Chayav Adam, Lomar B'Lashon Rabbo, clearly this was the description of an actual conversation, which then became now linked to a Mishnah, so they preserved the actual original discussion. You mean you can use any wood? Yes, indeed. And that's how we now read the Mishnah all the time. You put it up already on the way?
Yeah.
Great. Okay. Yeah. So, it says in the Mishnah you can use anything except for Zayin and Geffen. Now, it strikes you, I'm sure, as it did me, that Zayin and Geffen, and what's special about not using Zayin and Geffen is you don't want to use fruit trees. But then the question is, why did it say use Teina? Something's funny. How do we explain this? So, honey, my time. What's wrong with Zayin and Geffen, anyway? Rav Papa Amar Mishum Dekatri. What's wrong is that they are full of knots. And since they're full of knots, the wood is very knotted. Then there's a question as to what's so bad about having knots. Most hold because the knots have a higher water content, and therefore it smokes. Okay, from the Rambam, it seems that the knot, when you cut it, oftentimes the knot will leave a hole. It's not covered. You go and bring a piece of wood that has holes in it because the knots fell out as you were cutting the pieces out.
Does it matter that the holes are cut?
Just because it's hard to cut the knot, you mean?
Yeah,
they're very hard to cut. I don't know. I mean, it's, what's the difference? If you did it, you did it. I mean, here they wouldn't use it on the Mizbeach. Rav Akiva Yaakov says, no, it's because they're fruit trees, and you don't want to hurt Eretz Yisrael. This hurts Yishuv of Eretz Yisrael, that there should be trees that would be taken now to burn on the Mizbeach. And therefore, we don't want to use Geffen and Zayin. Later on, the Gemara is going to talk about the question of the Te'ina. Amazing. Al ha'etzim asher al ha'esh. We darshan. The etzim themselves have to be part of the esh, which means we want etzim hanituchim liyot esh. We want wood that is going to burn in such a way that it itself becomes the charcoal that's useful for the fire. Umay niu, what is this referring to then? Dukui shapir is probably the lotion. The low country. The azli miktar mitocho. We want to have branches that were cut properly in such a way that you don't have any knots, so that now the fire can start coming out of them. V'chi kol ha'etzim k'shirim l'marocha hein, kol ha'etzim k'shirim l'marocha, chutz min zayit v'geffen. Aval, the Elo Hayurigilin, the Marbiot Shoteina, the Shelegos, the Shel Eitz Shemen. Now, Rabbi Eliezer is Mosif to say that they would not use not only the wood that's mentioned in the Zayit and the Geffen, but he says also they wouldn't use Mayish, Alon, and Dekel. Obviously, this, if we're going to learn the, that the Eitz Shemen is a pine, then the Alon, you know, it can't really be a pine because pine is very knotted. I mean, it'll be a species of pine. But, I mean, pine is known for its knot. We'll see.
Is that a knot?
Listen, Alon, just, you know, when we're dealing with your issues, keep your head low. What did you say?
Isn't Alon an oak tree?
Alon. Ah, Alon is an oak. That's right. I'm saying. Which, what's the pine?
Oren.
Oren. I'm sorry. You're 100% right. There you are. Strong as an oak. Thank God you were here. In time to save me from making a bigger ass out of myself.
The chest in Afrikaans is an oak.
There you go. Okay. So, that works out very well then. Okay. So, Alon and Dekel were also excluded. And Charuv and Shikma were excluded. Now, why? So, Bishon and Landi Omar Mishum de Katri. It all makes very good sense. There's the Amachlokas over here whether we should exclude Mayish, Alon, Dekel, and Charuvim, and so on. That's if the issue is to avoid knots, and the machlokas between the Tanakam and Rabbi Eliezer may simply revolve around what is called a knot. Marzav or Avakas do not penetrate deeply into the wood. However, where you have a branch, you have a knot. On the surface, you have knots. So one man the armor holds, Rabbi Eliezer holds, look, if you have knots, you don't bring it to the Mizbech. It doesn't matter that they're not deep knots. Marzav, kivin lokatu migavoi. Since you don't have penetrating knots, so fine, Alpagathim Bavavroi Katre, Mycenon, you bring it anyway. If the issue is Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, why would there be an argument about bringing a Dekel? I mean, everybody agrees a Dekel is certainly damaging to Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, cut down the color. Me less being Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? Oh, my Lord. Lataymet, come on. Now you thought of that question. You couldn't have asked it in the Mishnah. You should have asked it in the Mishnah. As soon as we mentioned it's Bishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, why didn't you point out in the Mishnah it says, Teina, Neteina, let them Bishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael.